So, conclusion of our discussion on verse number 35 from chapter 9, canto 2. This is the third verse of 4 of the Chatur Shloki from Srimad Bhagavatam. And the emphasis this morning is going to be on Jiva Goswami's commentary, because what he has to say is typically Jiva Goswami great. What I'm going to be reading from, largely it's Bhurijan and his unveiling the lotus feet, and he draws largely upon Jiva Goswami's commentary. So I'll read and intermittently stop and discuss the verse. Yata mahanti bhutani bhuteshu chashvacheshvanu pravishtani apravishtani tata teshu nateshvaham. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself exist within everything created, and at the same time I am outside of everything. So I'm just going to read the commentary. This verse, which hints at prema bhakti, indirectly describes the rahasya, the Bhagavatam's great secret. Remember from yesterday's discussion, sarahasyam tad angam cha. Rahasya meaning mystery, literally is the meaning of the word, and Prabhupada has taken mystery to indicate devotional service. And when you hear in the purport, rahasya, rahasya, devotional service, great mystery, great secret, that's prema bhakti. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna tells Uddhava that the Vedas reveal truth in a esoteric, indirect fashion. Certainly that's true. Often just a pronoun is used, saha, to indicate that, the absolute truth. Krishna, you have to go very, very deep and deep and deep, and then you find Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. But saha is all this articulated. And Krishna says to Uddhava that he himself is pleased by this mode of description. Thus, Krishna has spoken to Brahma the highest truth in this verse, but he has spoken it indirectly also. This is Jiva Goswami's, like he's probing. There's this indirect language that's confusing. How are we to get Krishna out of this? Discover Krishna out of all this. It's a mystery. In his Bhagavad Sandarbha, Anuchet 95, Srila Jiva Goswami describes how this verse speaks of prema bhakti as follows. Without pure love, one cannot actually give up maya, because the previous verse was speaking about maya. Illusory energy is seeing things as existing apart from Krishna. One can't give up that tendency without pure love. So, having that tendency, I was describing this tendency for fruitive intention, even in the arena of devotional service. You can't give it up. It doesn't go away. It's like, something stuck to your hand. It won't go away. Try it with the other hand. You get stuck to your other hand. won't go away. Fruitive intention. That's this, that's Maya. It's, the intent to enjoy apart from Krishna. It's very strong. Krishna then explains in this verse the confidentiality of that pure love. Quote, the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time I'm outside of everything. That's the translation of the verse. Now he's going to expand that. As the principal elements of creation simultaneously remain outside of created beings and still appear to have entered and are present in them, so also I, even though I have not entered this universe, being situated in Vaikuntha, appear to have entered and am present in the hearts of surrendered persons. Here is the confidential essence hinted at. That is, pure loving devotion, which brings the Supreme Soul under control and causes him to enter Pravishta and be active in a soul's heart. So, Super Soul is already there, but he's seated as neutral. Remember from yesterday? Krishna is neutral. This is Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's rendering. Krishna is neutral towards matter and all things inert. So he doesn't, this way, that way. This way, it's under his control, but he's neutral. But when there's pure love, it's no longer neutral. He enters personally into the heart. He comes under the control of that devotee. And things start to change. The perception certainly towards matter changes. He enters and he becomes active in the soul's heart. So the Lord says, I am manifest to my devotees inside, parentheses, in the activities of their minds, and outside, in the activity of their senses, due to their possessing the rahasya. They have the secret. They have pure love. So he controls their hearts. Their hearts become attracted to him only. He controls their senses because they wish to only serve him. He does that actively, like Hrishikena, Hrishikesha Sevanam. It's no longer neutral. It's no longer passive. It's an active role in the life of the devotee. And it's all a matter of how we regard Krishna. And any other practice doesn't have that same component. Like karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. This bhakti is where our effort combined with Krishna. So the key here is mercy. Everything becomes disclosed. Krishna becomes disclosed. The spiritual world becomes disclosed by mercy. The essence is receiving mercy. This confidential essence is self-illuminating, pure bhakti, which is composed of pure ecstasy. Because of their possessing this, my devotees perform no other activity. Thus, Sri Brahma has said to Narada, O Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari with great zeal, whatever I say has never proved to have been false, nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter, unquote. Like Krishna protects his devotee. And without bhakti, we're on our own. And it's not a nice place to be because Maya crushes us. Although we're conscious beings and matter is dull matter, illusion covers us, like, forcibly. Simply a matter of how we regard Krishna. New paragraph. There might be contention against this explanation, according to some interpretation of the four Chaturshloki verses, Sri Jiva Goswami says. But the actual purport of the verses is only found by this explanation. Paragraph. Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, quotes Sri Brahma Samhita to show that Krishna stays in the spiritual world. So now here's just supporting evidence for what Jiva Goswami's commentary is. Here's text 37, Brahma Samhita. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who resides in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, who resembles his own spiritual figure and who embodies his ecstatic potency, Ladini. Their companions are her confidants, who embody extensions of her bodily form and who are imbued and permeated with ever-blissful spiritual rasa. Because of that rasa, or rahasyam, they know the mysteries of Krishna. And they're not influenced by Maya or the material potency. Krishna actively is involved in their lives. He then quotes Brahma Samhita 38 to explain how Krishna enters the devotees' hearts. Quote, I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotees, whose eyes are anointed with the pomp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Shyamasundara, situated within the hearts of the devotees. Both of these verses are in Prabhupada's purport to this verse. Continuing, so what's just happened? He's going to go on to another point. So what's just happened is, Jiva Goswami has given an explanation that Krishna exists in the spiritual world. He's neutrally situated within the hearts of all living beings and within every atom. But he's actively situated within the hearts of his devotee. And because of that, they can see Krishna. In the spirit, this television example that Prabhupada gives, they can see Krishna. Krishna discloses. He comes under the control and he becomes actively participating in their hearts and their senses and their minds. Actively. They become controlled by him and he becomes controlled by them. That's what a loving relationship is. And neither's keeping score. Oh, you're controlling me too much. And then the elements, same. They're energies of Krishna. That because Krishna is in that spiritual position, that the energy, his energies are always with him. So they do not enter. But by expansion, they enter. They comprise the bodies of whatever is here. Mountains and trees and people and demigods and whatever there is nothing but Krishna's energy. At the same time, Krishna's energy is always with him in the spiritual realm. Continuing. Srila Jiva Goswami continues his discussion of this text in the same Anuchet. He says, what is called Rahasya, the greatest secret and most confidential essence, Prema Bhakti, is the most rare thing. Ordinary matters of this world are meant to cover and divert the eyes of evil and uninterested people from this. That's from the previous verse. Maya is, they can't see Krishna. Yoga Maya Samavrata, Bhagavad Gita. So, it is like a Chintamani gem hidden in a box. You look at the box, who would know that inside is a Chintamani gem? So Krishna's presence is concealed by that maya. But the devotee knows inside it's the Chintamani gem, the jewel of Krishna. And with love and faith, Krishna discloses his identity to them. Jiva Goswami goes on, thus the personality of Godhead has said, quote, the Vedic seers deal in esoteric terms, and I am also pleased by such confidential descriptions. That's this Uddhava Gita reference. Something is kept esoteric when it is a precious item, scarcely available, and not to be given away. This has been described in many statements, such as, quote, he sometimes bestows liberation, but hardly ever pure devotion. The personality of Godhead himself has also said this in his own words to his best devotees Arjuna and Uddhava in such statements that, because you are my very dear friend, I'm speaking this to you, my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all, hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. So that's Jiva Goswami's discussion on Rahasyam. I want to know if I can just stop this for a moment. Commentary. Burjan's taking Srila Prabhupada's purport and pulling out the... He has found six kind of bullet points that Prabhupada has established in the purport. First one is in relation to the elements being outside and inside at the same time. For the construction of the universe, which is Brahma's task, he draws upon the elements that are from Krishna's supply. But since Krishna's supply is unlimited, they're outside, and yet they're also within the material creation. And Krishna's position is likewise outside and inside creation. The next point is the Purusha avatars. It's not mentioned by name like that, but Krishna's presence, his all-pervasive presence within creation is by the agency of Supersoul, or the Purusha avatar, his plenary expansions, while at the same time he's existing in the spiritual world with Radha. And all of his internal potency expansions. And in those associations, he is enjoying transcendental pastimes while at the same time manifesting as the Purusha avatars. Next point is that these two thoughts that are just mentioned, they're not understandable by a materialist or by an impersonalist. It remains a mystery, and the key to entering into that mystery is devotional service. Next point is, just as there are energies of Krishna or elements of creation outside and inside the universe, those possessing bhakti have the Lord's pastimes and names and everything of the spiritual world, they're manifested within the devotee's heart. And that's a big mystery. Because for persons who aren't so privileged, they think when Rupa Goswami writes, or Jiva Goswami writes, or Raghunatha Goswami write, their writing is imagination. And it's not so. It's an enactment of the Lord's pastimes within their hearts. So one can say that's a matter of faith, and it's a matter of faith. And those that have pure devotion don't have a problem with it, and those that have pure devotion don't have a problem with it, and those that do not have pure devotion, they're excluded. That happiness of those pure devotees and the happiness of those who have the association of those pure devotees, they don't have access to it. Next, Prabhupada in his purport addresses the all-pervasive nature of the Supreme. To say that Krishna exists everywhere is taken by the impersonalist. Well, obviously, if he exists everywhere, he can't have personality. So, personality option just disappears. God is impersonal. So we have to have another explanation besides personal to say that God exists everywhere. So they don't have the super soul option either. That disappears. Because as soon as you have super soul and that which is from the super soul, then you have two. But you can't have two because all there is one. So super soul disappears. The spiritual world disappears, super soul disappears, the living entity disappears. Because what's a living entity? Well, all the living entity is this homogenized Brahman. So all individuality, all personality, all name, form, quality, everything disappears. Resting upon this idea that God is all-pervasive, and you can't have personality that's all-pervasive, as far as they're concerned. But Krishna, because he's omnipotent, and that's a no-no for impersonalists also. If you have potent and potency, then you have two. You can't have two, so God becomes impotent. Or God. And by the time the impersonalists are finished with him, he's really puny. So, because he has unlimited potencies, he can expand himself in plenary expansions. So how is all of this to be understood? Is it understood in a limited fashion by anything other than one who is possessed of pure bhakti? Why is it that a devotee who is possessed of pure bhakti would be interested in anything other than Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world? Because these are also, the answer is, these are also aspects of Krishna. That same Krishna that's with Radha and the cowherd boys and so on, he expands himself. The Paramatma feature is part of his existence. The creation is part of his existence. The Virat Rupa is part of his existence. And so these subjects find their place in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's all part of this absolute truth, Sri Krishna. He's not neutered. He's not impotent. He's not impersonal. Is all-powerful and all-personal. Therefore, Krishna rarely bestows prema upon anyone. The next point is the sixth of these main points, his outline, is wonderful and mysterious bhakti yoga may be received and understood only through the chain of disciplic succession. So that's the way that this mystery is to be approached. And if one doesn't approach it, it remains a mystery. And they may make some explanation of the mystery, and it's a misleading explanation. A couple other points. You may know this, you should know this, that the Chatushloki verses of the Bhagavatam are not only presented in the Bhagavatam, but they're presented in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, in the presenting of Lord Chaitanya, he discusses the Chatushloki verses. The Chatushloki verses and the whole of the Bhagavatam are about Sri Krishna, who is the object of love of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and not other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. So he describes and he expands this verse, text 35, into five verses. And here's the translation, straight from Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a paraphrase, Lord Vishnu speaking to Brahma in different words, communicating. Supreme affection for me is called love of God. And that is the ultimate goal of life. Let me explain. By a practical example, the natural characteristics of such love. The five material elements are existing inside and outside of every living entity. Similarly, I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, am manifested within the heart of the devotee as well as outside of his body. As the material elements enter the bodies of all living beings and yet remain outside of them, I also exist within all material creations, and yet I am not within them. I in his Bhagavan feature. A highly elevated devotee can bind me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his heart by love. Wherever he looks, he sees me and nothing else. See, one of the values of this exercise is there's certainly a symmetry between Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami and Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami and Srila Prabhupada. It helps me appreciate how simple and approachable Srila Prabhupada has made these very elevated presentations for the audience of the world that may not be, they don't have the background, they don't have the capacity, they don't have the quality of goodness. He makes it simple for them to receive this very, very elevated subject. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami then offers three texts from Srimad Bhagavatam that further expand on this same idea. Here's one of them. Well, here's all three of them. First one is the 11th canto, second chapter. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who destroys everything inauspicious for his devotees, does not leave the hearts of his devotees, even if they remember him and chant about him inattentively. This is because the rope of love always binds the Lord within the devotees' hearts. Such devotees should be accepted as most elevated. Then another, also from 11th Canto, Chapter 2. A person advanced in devotional service sees within everything the soul of souls, the Supreme Personality of God, Sri Krishna. Consequently, he always sees the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the cause of all causes and understands that all things are situated in him. And he is outside of everything. That last part is not there. So now, this is 10th Canto, Bhagavatam, text 30. All the gopis assembled to chant the transcendental qualities of Krishna very loudly, and they began to wander from one forest to another like mad women. They began to inquire about the Lord, who is situated in all living entities, internally and externally. Indeed, they even asked all the plants and vegetables about him, the Supreme Person. That's taken from Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami's expanding of the meaning of verse. So I'll conclude this with just going through. There's some other things, but we'll go back to Jiva Goswami and his sandarbhas and how he's expanding, taking this one verse and expanding its meaning or exhibiting the inner secrets of the verse. And as Krishna Sandarbha, there's a long section, Anuchedas 154 through 170. Srila Jiva Goswami wonderfully describes the exalted stage of Prema Bhakti that the Vraja Gopis possess. By virtue of their powerful love for Krishna, they remain constantly in Krishna's association. In Anuchedas 155, Jiva Goswami offers a quotation from the Bhagavatam to express the sarahasya meaning of the third verse of the Chaturshloki. Here it is. Here's how he presents it. Superficially describing the all-pervading Supersoul, Lord Krishna actually described the gopis' constant meditation on him and their uninterrupted sarasakhi perception of him through strong feelings of separation in the following Srimad Bhagavatam verse. This sarasakhi, this is mentioned by Bhaktisiddhanta in Sri Brahma Samhita. It's also mentioned by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. What sarasakhi is in the ecstatic, jubilant heart of a pure devotee who is experiencing bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, Krishna suddenly appears. And it's not an imagination. Krishna appears. He becomes attracted by their love for him, and he appears. And when Krishna appears in their heart, they go mad in their ecstasy of love for him. And their thoughts are completely absorbed in him. Their thoughts cannot go away from him. Jiva Goswami says, this phenomena is explained in the 10th canto, chapter 47, Krishna's letter to the gopis. My dear gopis, just as the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, are all pervading in this material world and present in the bodies of all living entities, in the same way, I am always present within you. It's exactly what the Chaturshloki verse is saying. I reside in your minds, in your senses, in your life breath, for I have taken shelter in all these places. And it's personal. It's Krishna can be in so many places at once. Not just as Paramatma, but within the hearts of his pure devotees. Krishna can be manifest in so many places. Krishna can be manifested in so many places in his palaces in Dwaraka or in the Rasa dance with the gopis. Krishna is not limited. He chooses to reveal his personal feature where there's love. And that's the mystery. Without that love, it remains a mystery. Jiva Goswami continues to explain Krishna's statement to the gopis. It can be interpreted in the following way. Quote, the material elements are causes of one another. That is, ether is the cause of air, air of fire, fire of water, water of earth. Each element's cause is situated in its effect. The subtler element is contained in the grosser element, plus the grosser element. That is, ether is situated in air. Air is situated in fire. Fire is situated in water. And water is situated in earth. One can understand from this that Krishna, who is the cause of everything, is therefore situated in everything. Got it? Because, as a general rule, causes are always situated in their effects. Krishna continues. Quote, even though we have been externally separated, I still always remain within you. I am thus eternally situated in all of you, although I am not externally perceived as such. In which way am I within you? Here is how. I am the refuge of the minds of all of you, who are my only life. Were I not with you because of separation from me for even a moment, your minds, etc., would be unable to exist. Or, in answer to the expected question, in which form are you situated in us? Krishna answers, only in that form that is two-handed, dark-complexioned, and plays the flute in that form. I am the refuge of all your minds. Now, it's amazing that this mystery thing is becoming less mysterious. The all-pervasive personality in that's accessible for those who have pure love. Bhagavan feature, it's not like you have to go back to Godhead, like, you know, get in a vimana and zoom, 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 and off you go back to Godhead. You know, from here to there. It's here. Because Krishna manifests in the heart of his pure devotee. In this same Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami states, although the gopis seemed to be separated from Krishna in his Prakat Lila, manifested pastimes, they were always thinking of him and thus perceived his presence directly in his Aprakat Lila, unmanifested pastimes. Being situated in the stage of Sarasakhi realization, the gopis saw Krishna constantly. And he quotes, Jiva Goswami quotes, in all my manifestations, your being separated from me actually doesn't take place. While separation does occur in my manifest pastimes, Prakat Lila, union with me simultaneously exists in my unmanifest pastimes, Aprakat Lila. It's pretty deep stuff. Then, Jiva Goswami goes on, Krishna speaking. At the same time, during separation, the union of the gopis with me is within my unmanifested pastimes in Vrindavan. Thus, although Krishna sometimes does go elsewhere, different places in Vrindavan, sometimes he goes to Mathura, sometimes he goes to Dwarka, with his associates in his manifest pastimes, his Prakat Lila, statements in Bhagavatam, such as the following one, is nevertheless quite accurate. Here's the statement. It is not possible for you to be separated from me, although the Prakat Lila is their separation. It's not possible. Thus it is explained that, now this is Jiva Goswami's voice, that this state of being always united with Krishna through love is the highest secret, but it is herein explained only in an indirect and obscure manner, similar to the manner in which Brahma-gyan is indirectly explained by the device of describing something else. Brahma-gyan is like, it is something else than the object. Indirect. It goes on in the same section of Krishna Sandarbha. Jiva Goswami discusses that even in the Prakat Lila, after his departure from Braja, the gopis remain in contact with Krishna in their minds constantly. And he goes on further. Sri Krishna expects the following argument from the gopis. Well, instead of considering us as being greatly afflicted by separation from you, and thus you, due to your compassionate heart, teaching us how to attain you, why don't you personally come in such a way that you are visible before us? We consider that your compassion is simply cheating. So to explain that, Jiva Goswami points to another verse in the 10th canto, chapter 47. My dear gopis, this is his letter to the gopis. Although you were accustomed to love me from the very beginning of your lives, in order to increase your super excellent love for me, I have purposely separated myself from you. I have done this so that you may meditate upon me constantly. In this verse, Jiva Goswami is now explaining this letter to the gopis. In this verse, Sri Krishna says to the gopis, quote, although you are full of love for me and always eager to see me, bhavati nam dasham priyaha. I have now separated myself from your company in order that you may constantly meditate on me. In this way, you may always see me in your minds, just as you formerly always saw me with your eyes. Krishna continues explaining what he wrote in this letter to the gopis. No, this is part of the letter to the gopis. When a woman's beloved is away, she thinks of him meditatively, and he is present before her. In fact, she is more conscious of him than when he was actually present. In the same way, you have become more conscious of me in this condition of separation than when I was directly present before you. It goes on, explaining what's the result of that constant meditation. My dear gopis, because you constantly think of me without thinking of anything else, and because you never forget me, you will quickly attain me. We're almost done. One more paragraph. In this same Krishna Sandarbha section, Jiva Goswami quotes another verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. One is chapter 47, another is chapter 82, and paraphrases as follows. Krishna speaking, I am completely submissive to the pure love of my devotees, and thus every day I leave the city of the Yadus and come to Brajabhumi, continually revealing my form to the residents there. I do this according to my repeated promise to return to Vrindavan. And he continues, Anuchet 165. The gopis were able to understand the description of Sri Krishna's uppercut presence among them and become satisfied to understand that they were not actually separated from him. Shukadeva Goswami describes their satisfaction as follows, 10th canto. After hearing the message written by their dearmost Krishna, the gopis became pleased and satisfied. Remembering that message, they spoke the following words to Uddhava. This is the end of our reading. Remembering Lord Krishna's instructions, the gopis were able to directly see Lord Krishna's uppercut form and pastimes and become relieved of their strong feelings of separation. They became very pleased. Pritaha. So that's like the climax of this, you know, Krishna's present within everything and he's not present within everything. The elements are present within everything and they're not present within everything. It's a great mystery, and assistance of our acharyas, we can get a little bit of a glimpse of that mystery. And I don't know how all of you feel about having heard these very, very deep explanations, but I'm finding it very nice to get and share it in this atmosphere. Take some questions, if there aren't.
But I really didn't capture that Harvey Cox.
He wrote a book called Secular City. And he was complaining in that book that Christianity has lost it.
So, I mean,
he appreciated that the Hare Krishna movement hadn't lost it.
Oh, I see.
That at least the teachings and how Prabhupada is presenting the teachings, there's no separation between your worldly activity and your devotional life. It's embedded in Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada presented it that way. The life of the Hare Krishna devotees, in his estimation, was what Christianity originally was and has become secularized. So what that says to us in practical terms is we should be very careful to avoid that same influence, because we're in the atmosphere where that's the influence. You know, God disappears from the workplace. God disappears from so many parts of our life except when we're doing our direct devotional activity. And practicing like that and accepting that standard, that would be a big, big loss or deviation from Krishna's everywhere. So we're not the platform of the gopis. We're not the platform of such elevated, pure devotees. But we're to cultivate, according to our capacity and faith, Krishna is to be accessed by the medium of devotional service, which applies to all the parts of our life, constitutionally. Not that something else. We're constitutionally servants of Krishna when we're doing our sadhana. And then when we're doing the other parts of our life, that goes into the off position. This separation of church and state idea, while its intention is understandable, because so much dissension in Europe was caused over this religion against that religion, and not only in Europe, where the forefathers of the founders of America came from, but the history of the world. And so let's keep the government, the state, unified by separating, so we don't get the church or religion meddling and influencing and politicking in government. Let's keep it separate. It's protected. You do your religion, but you separate state. So there's that which is for God, and there's that which is for the state. You keep them separate. That was their intention. Good intention. Very foolish. It results in secularism. And in course of time, secularism, the whole idea of what is religion, becomes, in fact, an expectation of social welfare work, which is a function of the government. And what are you doing to help people? That's a government function. The worth of your religion is how much of that you do, from the perspective of the secular state. And don't tell us how much you're teaching people the scripture and having them chant and develop love of God. What are you doing to help people?
What do they mean by when the U.S. government says, "In God we trust," on the coins they put in? It just looks like a simple...
Well, we value... I wasn't one of the founding fathers that put that on the currency, but my sense is that we value and protect that. In God we trust. That's like, the foundation of... Now there's the government, and while we're respecting that, we're not involving government leaders in, deciding what policies the government is going to have. Because we had a big problem with that in European history. The popes became completely decadent. And, they just buddying up with the government people so they could stay in a ruling, just everything became decayed. It was Kali, the personality of Kali's playground, integrating the two. And a lot of abuse on all different levels. So let's separate the two. In God we trust. But that's over there. It's a fundamental protected right. We value it. Separate the two. Yes?
Yesterday you mentioned that...
Identifying what with?
Identifying...
Ourselves with something else?
Something else is considered...
So yeah.
I was asking how to practically strive for the... Constantly strive for the...
Follow our predecessor acharyas very faithfully. And they'll keep you on track. And our predecessor acharyas have given us these two principal things, chanting and scriptural direction. Prabhupada did so many wonderful things, and one of those wonderful things is he made things so simple. Here's how he made it very simple. One of the examples was a railroad. Railroad requires two tracks. If one track is missing, the train will fall, capsize, it'll fall off. So, as with the train, it requires two tracks, so spiritual staying on path, on course, requires these two. That which will purify the heart, and that which will give us direction in our activity. And proper discrimination about what's what. The chanting, the scripture. Two tracks. You get to your destination. One without the other That which will pure, yeah, derail, that's the word. That the chanting is for Chaita Dharpana Marjanam, cleansing the heart. But supposing someone is chanting without proper sambandhagyan, it can easily become sentiment, and sentiment can easily become fanaticism. And that's a problem. Both are a problem. One's more extreme. And the other is, you just have teaching without a pure heart. Won't get you to where you want to go. But both are required. So we regularly hear, and we regularly chant. And combining the two carefully, parallel, under proper guidance. So even tendencies that are there or may awaken from a dormant state and, you know, to take us in a errant direction, those two things combined will help keep us on track and focused. We have persons to help us, help guide us along the way. Fall asleep, you know, they bang us in the head and, hey, wake up. Keep us on track.
Maharaj, what she just said, and then what I asked a little earlier, a thought came in my mind that people who are working, like adults who have come from India, or especially, you know, here, we go to work and then we turn off some of our spiritual, I mean, we put a blinder and just do what we need to be doing there. Home, we have a little different life. However, I'm thinking about these children. They even have a much more difficult issues. Not only they face cultural issue between Indian families and all the spiritual things also. So for us, adults, we have a spirituality and non-spirituality issues at work. But like Gitigari, Ki, Abhishek, or any other kids, they have this Indian thing, food habits, to culture, to completely the spirituality. I feel they are in a much difficult spot. My assumption, I mean, assessment.
Well, yes. And no, and it's the same spot. It's just there's less ballast to keep the ship from, you know, tilting. There's one in the New York temple. There's one woman that felt like you're feeling. So she asked permission. She did a little project. She interviewed the kids, the teenagers in the your congregation, and ask them what's it like, you know, along the lines that you're just asking. And what they, a number of them, most of them, expressed was they have this dual identity. They wear a certain identity in school, and they wear a different identity at home, and they have to, like, you know, oscillate back and forth between these two identities. Because if they, on the outside, were as they were at the temple, their peers would not relate to it. Now, there are exceptions to that. I had this very discussion with one teenager, and she just shrugged her shoulders and said, "You know, I don't have two identities. I am who I am." And I said, "Do people reject that?" She said, "No, you know, like very confident, not like in your face, challenging, you know." Na-na-na-na-na-na. It's not like that, just being who she is. And I said, "How about your friends?" He said, they know who I am, and they accept me. If they're persons... She didn't get into, like, persons that don't accept it. She just said, people accept it. I'm just, you know, she's, because of her confidence. And it's not a loud, boisterous, pushy kind of a personality. She's, you know, calm, composed, but very thoughtful personality. So it's not always like that, but that certainly the immaturity of teenage and, you know, the all of the stuff that goes along with teenage life, there's more peer pressure. Question of how confident. So one of the topics that Balaram Leela and Nav Kishori and I were discussing, you know, what are some topics for the boys and girls youth group? And it's finding your place or finding your voice, you know, having a clear sense of identity and just being who you are. And being very confident in being who you are. And not having to be this chameleon, depending upon where I am. I'm like this, or then I'm like that. That's preaching. It has an uplifting and beneficial effect for those who come in contact with someone that's not, like, you know, in a challenging spirit. They're just being who they are. That's very powerful. It's a powerful message. But, because, you know, adults have more years. Adult Indian personalities have far more years of identifying themselves with a certain way of life and culture. I'll just add to that, that the relationships amongst peers who are, you know, youth devotees of a spiritual, extended spiritual family, their relationships with one another are very important to have and feel the support of, and as well as from the parents, but also from close and supported by them. Okay. Both, please.